And we're back, finally, with a brand new episode of the Full Moon Show. Hello. Sorry, it's been forever. And we're all sitting here drinking booze because it's our intern's 21st birthday. So cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Ting, ting, ting.
Brandon bringing us free booze.
Yes.
Nothing better than recording the sound of people drinking.
Yes, it's amazing. We have a great all-star lineup with us today. My name is James Stevenson. I'm the senior community manager at Insomniac Games and the host of the Full Moon Show. To my immediate left is everyone's favorite big teddy bear, Rumpus creative Lord. Director on Resistance 3, Marcus Smith.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi. Drinking tequila out of a champagne glass. Directly across the table from Marcus is our senior designer, and he's been kind of leading the charge on multiplayer, Cameron Christian.
Hey, guys.
Drinking tequila out of a martini glass.
Correct. Indeed. There's a bottle of tequila on the table. Who knows where this podcast is going to go. And the voice you last heard right there directly across from me at our table in the Resistance 3 war room, which is about to be taken down, is lead designer on Resistance 3, Drew Murray.
Hey, guys.
Does that mean Drew's going to take this down?
I don't know.
With a lighter?
I don't know. You guys have finally out there have had a chance to see this room a little bit in the dev diary videos that have been getting put out, though we've intentionally blurred a lot of shit out in the background, because if you saw like this one corner, you know how the game ends, and that's no good.
That's true.
That's no good. So, speaking of the game ending, one of the things that we're getting very close to ending right now is the fact that, you know, we are almost done.
We are almost done.
Drew like has this like look on
his
face.
No, we're being distracted because there's a happy hour going on in the office because of the B-Win's birthday.
The bass is starting to thump, exactly. And I was just like,
"I'm sure it's yeah.
And I can't even hear it because I've got headphones on, so I'm listening to our feed. So it's good. There's a party going on right outside this room, which used to not be a conference room. This used to be where the party would be, but now it is a conference room. So we're getting down to the end here, the final hours of Resistance 3 before the disc is done. There's still a lot more to do multiplayer-wise. We've got a beta coming up here soon. We're going to continue patching the beta, updating the configs and the servers. So the multiplayer aspect is still a work in progress all the way through the game ships and beyond. But right now, we're getting very close to wrapping up single
player.
We're
very close to wrapping up a disc, which is pretty exciting. I'm not saying we are doing it, but if we were to do DLC, that would be actually going on as well.
Right. So there's lots of stuff going on. How do you feel looking back on the last 3 years of working on Resistance 3 now that we're kind of at this moment here? We're almost at the end.
Exhausted, I think, is the one way to put it. No, it's been 3 years. It's been a pretty good 3 years. We've had a lot of people kind of come and go, and I think we built a really solid team, and we built a pretty solid game, and it'll be nice to be done with it, I guess.
What a gloomy teddy bear. Jeez. I gotta say, I'm super excited. I think the game comes really, really close to what I was hoping it would be when we started 3 years ago. You know, when we first sat down and started talking about the things we wanted to focus on it being more of, you know, feeling a little bit more of like you're part of the resistance and you're part of like the last remnants of humanity that they're fighting back, and it being more of an individualized story and things like that. I went back recently. I was kind of cleaning up a bunch of old documents and saw some of our original notes from meetings 3 years ago, and it's like, wow, yeah, we actually hit those points, and we actually pulled that stuff off, and it's pretty awesome that we managed to kind of set those goals at the beginning and stick to them and do a lot of things, I think, in Resistance 3 that we've never done in any of our games before, and honestly, a decent number of people were like, we shouldn't try doing this.
Yeah,
we shouldn't try doing this at the 3 years ago.
Years ago, yeah. I mean, just things like the amount of sort of human interaction we have, the amount of in-game storytelling that we're doing is much, much higher than and much more complex than anything we've done before. And there were people who were just like, you know what, let's work on the things we've done well in the past. This seems like a dangerous road to go down, and it was a somewhat dangerous road to go down. I think it was a risk, but I think ultimately overall it paid off really, really well in the game.
So let's talk about, like, you know, we've talked about how this game has had 3 years. Like, what are the things that you see in Resistance 3 that were only possible, and like some of the design, and like what did that 3 years mean to you guys looking back on the project now?
Playing the game before we ship it.
Yeah, tuning an entire game and not just like level by level or section by section, I think is huge. And again, it's looking at this war room, like that was something we had planned from the get-go, was let's plan out the whole game and let's figure out the ebb and flow and intensity throughout the whole single-player campaign. And I think we nailed it. I think, you know, I'm playing through it, and I'm still having a lot of fun, and I know every in and out of that game. So I think what Drew was talking about, where it's environmental storytelling, I mean, little things like our NPCs weren't acknowledging the player, really, not really looking at the player, and that went in recently because we wrote the system to do that again, sort of much better than we had done in the past, and really makes the world feel alive. And that's the kind of thing that I think the extra time bought us, was that level of polish.
Definitely. I think it's just a level of polish that I haven't seen at Insomniac before, and a level of tuning. Again, we've been able to do, you know, in the last 6 months, we've been going up to Sony and doing playtesting and focus testing every 6 weeks or so, and doing a lot of internal testing and just being able to, you know, we come back and it's every time we come back from a test, we've got a list of stuff that we want to change, and every time we make those changes, where I think we're, you know, I would say 90% of the time we're improving the game. And usually that we just didn't have time to do that. We were, you know, if we were lucky, 4 to 6 weeks before, we'd have something that's relatively playable. A group of people would run through the game, send a bunch of comments out. We'd make a bunch of adjustments really quick. We'd play it one more time, do like last minute tweaks, and it was out the door. And you know, that's what happens when you have a 1 year pre-production and 1 year production cycle. It's just really fast. And I'll say the third year was an amazing luxury that yeah. I think has made a huge difference to the game.
Yep. Also, 3 years ago, Cameron wasn't here yet.
That's
so
right.
That's a big change.
Wow. That is crazy to think about. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Wow.
When did you come on? Two and a half years ago? Almost 3 years ago.
February.
Okay. So, yeah, 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Ah, that's nuts to think about. So, yeah. What are you most proud of? Without spoiling anything, but I think we can talk in generalities if it's something we haven't talked about or shown, and I can edit things out if otherwise. Though I'll hate you if I have to edit something out, but that's okay. So what are you most proud of in Resistance 3? At this point, near in the final days of it, sipping tequila from a champagne glass.
It's hard to toot your own horn, so I'm going to toot somebody else's horn, and that's not a euphemism. Drew Murray should be extremely proud of the controls of our game, because he spent a lot of time and effort to try to get the controls spot on, and they are spot on. Like, it feels really good to play our game, and that's directly because of the input and hard work and dedication of Drew Murray. So.
And Bill Fulton, our usability guy.
I don't want to give Bill any credit.
Yeah, whatever.
Bill.
Bill and I spent a lot of time in dark rooms fiddling with weird curves.
That is a euphemism.
Fiddling with curves and
fiddling
dark
rooms. Fiddling with weird curves and dark
rooms.
Exactly.
Yeah, Bill Fulton's awesome. Everybody should hire him.
I don't know if you guys can hear the party going on around the side of this room.
It's now Billy Idol.
You know, Carrie Dieterle, our head of HR, her favorite rock star is Billy Idol. So I think this is, she may be in control of the stereo right now.
They've Phil been turning Collins up to a ridiculous
that.
Level. Like when I can hear it through the headphones, we're not picking it up too much, I don't think. You may still be able
to
hear it.
I think they're messing with you.
Probably. But you hear him crank it up. You're like, dude, would this be blasting people out? So much for finishing Resistance 3, Marcus.
That's true.
Good Lord.
Go yell at them.
Drew?
You know, I would say... I guess I would either say the environmental storytelling, which I mentioned before, just the amount of storytelling we've got in the game. And I think that the story is a lot more personal, and I think it... I think it just has a deeper meaning than we've had in some of the past games. I think that turned out really well. The other thing I would say is I think that the weapons turned out really well. You know, I am not tooting my own horn here, even though I did work on them a lot. But I think the best weapons were weapons that we, you know, the designers came up with sort of initial pitches for and ideas for, and then they sort of got co-opted by animators and effects guys and the gameplay guys, in particular Steve Ryder and Adam Neuchester. Are we announcing all the weapons yet?
There's only one we haven't.
They already talked mutator.
Okay, yeah.
Mutator.
The mutator is you know sort of a plague like weapon that you can charge up and shoot this goo at guys and when you shoot enough of it on guys that actually you know transforms them, they bubble up and collapse, and then when other guys come near, it'll explode and can infect them too. And the original idea, we had this idea for you know this plague gun, and it was honestly it was a fairly half baked idea. And Adam and Steve in particular, and Ian Gargle on the effects just really took it over. And every day, you know, those guys were coming in, and Steve was doing these crazy animations of how the different ways that guys could basically explode from the inside out with weird mutated bubbles and stuff, and just really took it way above and beyond from this very, like I said, kind of sketchy initial idea to something that's really awesome and really different from anything I think anything else in our game, and I think anything that I've seen in other games.
Cam, you have anything to add? What are you proud of?
What am I proud of? Just being able to capture like the atmosphere and the like the sense of a like the road adventure, you know, meeting those pockets of resistance along the way. It's like when you're working on your own little section, you know, sometimes you lose sight of the whole like big picture, and just like having the chance to play through it and see how it fits in, and just it really captures it. You know, it's like every level feels different and like a new place. I'm learning about new people, and it's just I think we captured that really well.
Yeah,
you know,
I would say that the thing that I really like of yours the most is the level layout for Pennsylvania, which we showed at E3 a little bit. But the houses that they're cantered that you built in town kill me. Every time I go in there, I'm just like, this is the best feeling. Because it's giving you that in horror movies when they tilt the camera a little bit and they give you that odd angle. They give you that. It makes you really uncomfortable. It's really awesome.
And it's great because, again, that speaks to just the amount of time we had to iterate. You remember the first draft? It was like very like row houses and stuff and pretty relatively flat. And over a couple of months, you know, you transformed it into this just really kind of almost shanty town, really three-dimensional and kind of awkward in a good way.
Yeah. Super memorable spot in the game.
Exactly.
So let's compare and contrast real quick. Last 3 months of Resistance 2, last 3 months of Resistance 3. Because I think it'll be just insane contrast.
Definitely an insane contrast. The difference was Resistance 2, we were much, much more panic mode. It was kind of, we had a lot to do over those last 3 months of really important things that needed to be done late in the game. But we were really cranking to just get the thing done out the door. And this time I think we had things in place, and we were still writing up polish bugs till recently. I mean, we're still doing things that are like, hey, it would be better if we did this. We never really even got to that point on R2 for the most part.
I'll give a specific example, which was I think about 3 days before we went gold. I had just come home from a My Bloody Valentine concert and couldn't hear because my ears were ringing so loud. And I came home and Katie was like, your phone is ringing, because I couldn't hear it ring. And Marcus, who was the project manager, and me, who was working on the last level of the game, and a bunch of other people got called in because the final boss, Daedalus, in Resistance 2 was just not working. And we had no idea why.
Yeah.
And it ended up basically being a programming issue, but basically there were like eight of us just sitting there watching the programmer work and trying to figure out what was going on. And, you know, still even like trying to get some last minute implementation in. And this time it's like everything's been pretty done for a while. And, you know, we're fixing little bugs, little issues, little glitches, and doing little tunings, but it's just a whole different level of reduced intensity, and to me, it's the difference between going in and going, oh my god, what is this going to end up like, and us walking in and being like, you know what, this is going to be a good game, and I'm really confident and calm with how things are turning out.
I mean, it means making choices. Like, we could not make choices on R2. We were just trying to get it out the door. And now we can make choice of what's going to be better for the game, what's going to make a better experience, you know, and that ultimately is going to make the better game, Andrew says.
Having that breathing room to polish is just great. You know, it's like I'm looking for everything I can to polish, you know, and it's like when you just push through the wall, you just don't have that opportunity, you know, and so it's like I've had a chance to play through the game multiple times, you know, near the end on an almost finished disc, which is just something I've never had a chance to do before, you know, because I've just always been kind of pushed to that wall, and so it's just great, you know.
So did you... What were your expectations of this time 3 years ago? Did you think it was going to be like this? Were you hoping it was going to be like this, but you weren't sure?
No, I think 3 years ago we were probably thinking we were going to endeavor upon something pretty similar because we hadn't yet got the extra time that we were going to ultimately ask for. There were a lot of differences in sort of the politics of the company, what we were doing. I mean, 3 years is a long time to make any long-term plans or short-term plans. At Insomniac, things like that change constantly. So, you know, the hope was we had the right team, we were getting the right people together, and the hope was that we were going to do things differently by, you know, really building off what we had on Resistance 1 and 2, not make such a drastic different choices that we did between 1 and 2. Sort of make the best of 1 and 2, take the best elements and move on. So, you know, 3 years ago, yeah, it was scary. I mean, a lot of us were in new positions. I was moving from project management to creative director, which is and filling in for Ted Price, which is a huge deal here. Like, I didn't know how he was going to take it, take me, you know, trying to make decisions that he might not think are the best decisions. Drew's lead designer. We had new project manager. We had new, basically every
new
leader,
art director,
leader role
new,
was new.
Yeah, pretty much, really close.
Really
if
close.
Not, if not,
maybe
one.
I think maybe Heather was the only person who was
Kevin?
A lead. That's right, Kevin.
Kevin
was carried on.
Although
on
no,
animator.
He wasn't. He didn't. Well, yes, there were no leads at the beginning of Resistance 2 that were also the beginning of Resistance 3. That's the way I'd put it. There were a lot of new, so we were hoping that we could capitalize, and you know, you kind of want to make the best of it, but you never know. You never know until it's in the game. And as I said, like last 3 months, we've seen a lot of stuff go in the game that makes me extremely happy. That I don't think would have made it had we not had the extra time.
So it's kind of crazy thinking back to like how long ago that damn billboard showed up on the fucking internet and was in, and
like
now
forever.
And then Battle LA got delayed and it was finally in that, but it seems crazy the, you know, how long we've actually been working on this when you really think about it compared to some of the other projects that have, you know, came in and got off the door.
That was a good point, right? Because that billboard had that blacked out section that everybody was pointing out thinking it was photoshopped, but it actually was blacked out because it had the original release date,
right? Which
changed.
Yep.
So. Yeah, I mean, yeah, a lot has happened, and I mean, you know, I've been at Insomniac.
Oh, it's in the movie still. You can't read it, but it's in the movie.
Right.
The white. Yeah, I noticed that finally when I watched it on Blu-ray, and I was like, oh, I'm like, you couldn't tell because it's too small.
That's
but
funny.
And they never kept it on the board or anything long enough, but it was actually filmed in the movie with the date
That's
on
great.
It.
Actually, I've been here for 6 years now, and I shipped 3 games in the first 3 years I was here, and then spent the
three
last 3 years working on just the one, and it's a world of difference.
So there's some fun stuff coming up in the next few weeks. We're starting a Friends and Family beta that is sort of our closed beta. We wanted to do our closed beta much earlier, but there were some issues at the time we were planning on doing it that were out of our control. So it's happening now, and that's going to allow us to make a lot of changes. We're going to get into that. But kind of tying into the next couple weeks, there's some great stuff coming up. We're going to be at Comic-Con. We've got a panel. So we're really excited about that. We're going to talk about some new things. There's going to be some stories out there hitting online about the story of the game. We shipped preview code out to a ton of outlets that's going to let you see the first 30 minutes of the game across the board or so. But it's to a certain point of the game. And the journalists get to play a little bit farther even and get to write about their impressions. So there'll be some great coverage hitting probably the week this podcast comes out, actually, because they're trying to ship it right today. So there's going to be a lot of coverage over the next couple weeks, but I did want to get into multiplayer some because we've talked a lot about, you know, development and campaign. Multiplayer, we are shipping this Friends and Family beta next week, and we've got a couple maps, but I'm going to let Cameron talk about kind of some of the cool stuff that's in the beta that I think some of you, we may do some community stuff towards the end of the Friends and Family portion and get in our Community Day winners and other people, so some of you may get into this in the not-too-distant future. But Cam, I'm going to leave it to you.
So as far as beta coming up, you know, we'll have a limited progression that'll give you a good sense of what will be going on in the full multiplayer. We'll give you a taste of some of the new weapons that are brand new to Resistance. Let's see, in the beta, I think we're just doing Team Deathmatch.
I think we also have one of our objective modes. Yeah, it's Chain Reaction, right? I'm going to edit if it's not. I think I'm pretty sure it's Chain Reaction.
Yeah.
We're all looking at each other like, okay.
Shit. And no, it's one of those things where you're working on all the modes, and then when they whittle them down. Yeah.
I am almost positive. Let's talk about Chain Reaction for a minute, because I'm almost positive that it's
and
Chain
we'll
Reaction.
Edit it out.
Exactly.
Right. Awesome. Correct.
Chain Reaction, one of our new game modes. The kind of focus around this game mode is kind of territory controlled. There are linear kind of capture points placed in these maps, and essentially your team is trying to take control of all these control points and then activate this beacon kind of at the end. And depending on what side you're on, if you're Chimera, you're trying to activate these points to essentially open a wormhole and like bring down destruction. And if you're the human team, you're trying to like stop them from opening this wormhole. And so, you know, both teams start out on opposite sides of the map, and they kind of rush to the center point. There's normally 5 points. And they try to take out the other members and take control of that point. And once they unlock that first point, it unlocks the next one in the chain, therefore Chain Reaction. And so once they get to the very end, they can go ahead and start trying to activate the wormhole or try to destroy the wormhole. Definitely focused around wanting to encourage teamwork and encourage a lot of our different abilities for holding points and working together, and really just kind of theme it in the Chimeran universe, you know, in our universe that we can only really do in our game, you know. And so that's one of the big things with that.
So we'll be hoping you'll check that out. There's a good selection of weapons. It's not all the weapons. There's some of the announced weapons you won't play with, but you get a good selection of weapons. There's a good selection of abilities. And we're going to continue updating the beta as we go. It'll be friends and family mostly only at first. We're getting to the public section where early access from SOCOM and if you're in Europe or in the SCE territories, which is South Africa, Middle East, some of the other places, PlayStation Plus get in. That's going to happen early August. And somewhere around there, we're also going to let in the people that won Community Day contests online, if you came to our Community Day. So we're going to be ramping it up as we see the need to add more people into the beta. But we're planning that big deluge and going public with the beta in that early August time frame right now. So I'm really excited. And if you have feedback on the beta, please come online and post it. Now, talking about multiplayer, because I want to touch on that before we go to fan questions. How has our longer development process helped multiplayer? What has it done to make multiplayer better than it could have been if we hadn't had that? And I know we're going to say iteration, these other things, but let's. But I'm really interested in how your perception of how multiplayer has changed over the last 3 years.
Iteration.
Yeah. I answered the question. Polish. Sorry.
I mean,
specifically though, we had. I mean, we've done this in Resistance 2 as well, but this is to a greater extent. We had a whole separate multiplayer game that we developed, we started testing, we said, not very fun, move on, change it all up. So that's pretty big.
So talk about that just a little bit. Like, what were some of the learnings and what...
I'm trying to remember. It was a little bit more locked in classes. It actually felt a little... I mean, I would say it was a little more Team Fortress 2 style.
Definitely. Although, it I think what it lacked was that accessibility for people, that it was really complicated, and there wasn't a smooth way to kind of make it more accessible to people to kind of figure things out. It was really deep.
It was really deep. Deep enough that, like, I think a lot of people here had a hard time keeping up with it, unless they were, like, intimately involved with the creation of it. You know, at the time... Jake Beagle was the lead of multiplayer and did a you know again, we were experimenting. We were trying to find a somewhat of a new direction for the game. And, you know, it came down to, you know what, Marcus, Jake, and I sat down and we agreed. It was fun if you knew what was going on, but it was a little too deep, I think. And we kind of did a reassessment. Jake went back to the drawing board and took a lot of the things that we had built, that, you know, a lot of things ended up becoming sort of abilities and that kind of thing. But we've started focusing more on the concept of player choice, which it's been a mantra since we started working on the game. And I think that, you know, Jake did a great job of sort of revamping what we had and making it much more accessible. And then Cameron came in about a year ago and took it over when Jake moved to a different project and just carried it to the finish line, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just that evolution. You know, it started out as definitely more class-based. You know, we wanted to encourage that teamwork, you know, early on and get that. And, you know, it was a little restrictive, you know. And then as it evolved, those did become abilities. And so it allowed for a lot more freedom, more of that player choice. And so we still have a lot of those teamwork components, like Drew was saying. It's like we pulled parts of those classes out and made them abilities so you weren't forced to play that class, but you could grab, oh, I'm going to have a heal beacon, so I can be a healer type guy, but I can still have these super offensive abilities, you know. And so not so locked into it, and definitely, I think, made it a lot more accessible.
I'd love to hear you talk about like some of the ways you can combine loadouts and kind of have player choice favorites and how that works. Because, and just for people who maybe haven't followed Resistance 3 multiplayer as closely, essentially every player has two attributes, one combat and tactical. Is that my
opinion? Yeah. Pretty much the way it works is that each player has two kind of passive attributes, which kind of help their general gameplay style. And then they have two active abilities, which can be used in the midst of battle. And those are kind of broken up into two different things. Starting with the active abilities, we have support abilities. And those are the things that kind of came from, like, our evolution of classes. It's the abilities we wanted that you could use them to help yourself, but they would always help your team as well. And so things like... things like the heal beacon and the ammo beacon is something you can definitely use selfishly, but you know that your other teammates can come and use that stuff. So that's the one set of active abilities. And the other set were more of kind of the tactical active abilities, something that is just used pure selfishly and helps you in combat. So things like dash, which lets you kind of like ninja dash 15 meters in front of you, or things like a decoy or a doppelganger, which has a hologram that spawns right next to you to try to confuse the players. And so having those, you know, you can kind of mix it up and create your type of build. Now stepping kind of back to the passive abilities, those things are kind of help your gameplay style, but they're not things that you have to manage. You know, like we didn't want to have you manage too much. So these passive abilities do things like they increase your rate of fire, or they give you more health, or they make you immune to being frozen or something like that. So like it's things that you can kind of switch up it depending on the battle, you know, or depending on the game mode. You know, a lot of times like you'll have certain sets of passive abilities that will help you, let's say, for capture the flag. You know, I'm going to have trackers, so I'm going to try to hunt down the person. Or I'm going to have something like vital signs, which shows like the health of an enemy and his abilities, so I can figure out like how I might approach attacking this person. And so I think with the amount of abilities we have, I think we're right around the right number, having enough to have a lot of variety, but not having too much to where things kind of become worthless.
Yeah. Right.
You know? Or muddy. Whenever you're playing, you can keep track of what's going on, which...
That was definitely a big focus.
It was a problem for a while.
Yeah, definitely.
We had like all these major effects going off every time anyone did anything. And you get in and it just looked like a fireworks display was going off. And it was just like, I don't know what's going on, because it seemed like three Roman candles just came from my left, and like somebody was shooting off jumping jacks to the right. And
I have no idea what I'm supposed to do, because it's chaos. Yeah.
I think that was one of the feedback that kept coming in early, and then probably, a year in or so maybe, to Resistance 3. 3 multiplayer was like, okay, I have all of these abilities, and it would always be, which ones did you use this week? And I'm like, I kind of pick my one and stick with it because I don't want to try the others. And some of the other ones, they seem really worthless. And it's like, you know, and then it was like, well, we got to tone these down because they're too powerful. It's like, wasn't it better to tone everything up and make sure you have like 6 really powerful abilities rather than 10 abilities or 12 abilities where 2 are cool and the others are all kind of whatever.
Well, and it speaks to the danger of playtesting early as well. I know Ted is probably the worst at this. Is he's so competitive.
Oh, my God.
That he doesn't really care about trying different abilities to see what they are. He basically tries it once, and if it doesn't work, he moves on and never goes back. And he finds what's most effective, and he becomes, like, super obsessed with, like, I want to know how well I did. I want to know I crushed everyone. I want to know. And I was like, no.
Get the stats screen up.
Exactly. Yeah.
Where's the leaderboard, damn it?
I'd have all these conversations where it's like, no, Ted, I want you to fail. I want you to try everything. I want, you know, like, that was the impetus is when you're playtesting early, forget about being successful. Try to everything and tell us why you weren't successful or what wasn't working for you or what you thought it was supposed to do versus what it did.
And another danger of that, and I think something that has worked really well for the game that we've ended up with is you know, for the first, I don't know, year and a half, we were playing just Team Deathmatch. And, you know, all of a sudden you get into things like objective modes and we've got our streaks that are you know, species based on whether or not you're human and Chimera. And I'll say, like, whether or not I'm human and Chimera, I will play different loadouts based on like what streak rewards I'm going to get. And certainly when we go to objective modes, I have totally different loadouts than what I'll play in with Deathmatch. And I think it's great that we've got that variety, we've got that experimentation, and really depending on the game type and even like the species and whether I'm going to go get Cloak or get the Riot Shield, it totally affects what choices I'm making for my character.
By the way, the fact that they're playing 80s music out here for Brandon's birthday, who was not born in the 80s.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic, isn't it? But Brandon is sort of a hipster, so irony works well with him.
that's true.
I think this Stone Temple Pilot song was actually like 92.
Yeah, it was when they were doing Breakfast Club theme songs and soundtrack tracks.
Speaking of other asides right now, normally our conference rooms freeze you out. But this conference room is hot as shit right now.
It's moved on.
It is not cooling down, which is unfortunate. Because normally I'm like bringing a jacket to some of our conference rooms. Yeah.
I
was going to say 3 of us are in shorts right now. It's summertime. This is like, I'll say the best thing about Resistance 3 is the September 6th release date.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the game is going to be shipped. And it's still summer.
Yeah. It's still summer.
My first summer off in forever.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Europe,
I was saying it's sad too
years?
That the one person still wearing long pants is the only California born and raised native.
Usually I'm like, well, I'm going to be here like 16 hours today anyway, so it's going to get cold at like 1 a.m. I should wear my jeans and like. Yeah,
but at
man,
least the traffic's
it.
Good at that time.
I used to fly home to Venice, yeah.
I think we could maybe move on to some fan questions. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about before we go to fan questions about multiplayer, about single player, things you want to get off your chest?
I
want to
throw down a gauntlet that we should start a Insomniac versus Full Moon Club team deathmatch tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Just throw it down right now. Sam, if you're out there.
I think we should have several. We should do it against some MyRez guys, some different clans.
Did
he just try and shot that tequila? Because I looked up and he looked like he had this face. He was like, oh, God.
It's the remnants of a Cape Cod mixed with some kind of tequila.
Some tequila, yeah.
Some peppery tequila.
And it's more it's more of a sipping tequila, too. So bad things
I was not shooting it, but...
I'd like to lose some carne asada right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, we took Brandon to lunch today at Chevy's, and that was a horrible mistake because it took an hour and 45 minutes or some garbage. But then on top of that, the kid orders a mango margarita, and I'm just like... I'm like, come on.
You were 21.
Come on,
once.
Man. He's 21.
Zima to go with
exactly.
that, buddy?
You need to be guiding him.
Yeah.
I was like, guys, let's go to Tony's Darts Away. We'll get some good IPAs. They've got Russian River on tap. No, we want a margarita.
That yellow goldenish beer?
No, well, Russian River is a brewery up in NorCal, north of San Francisco.
They've got like a sour beer that they're
they
really
do. They do some really awesome wild and sour ales, but their IPA, Pliny the Elder, is considered to be one of the top 5 beers.
Passion fruit flavor stuff we had it the last time.
Did you get a...
If you don't like IPA. IPA, you're wrong.
Did you get him, did you get him a halter top to go with his mango martini?
No. Wow, poor guy. No, he's wearing this 21, I'm 21 today, or don't card me anymore, or whatever, yeah, shirt, and they got him a hat. I don't know if, like, the guy, AV Club got it, or HR, whatever, it's got, like, a shot glass on the hat. Yeah. And then when you go to Chevy's, you get a sombrero on your birthday.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
so he comes back with the sombrero and then the 21 hat with the shot glass and stuff on top.
By the way, if you're a shop owner and you do not card Brandon, you've got mental problems.
Well, and that was the thing. So he was complaining about, he's like, God, he's like,
I thought he was 13. I was like, is it bring your
brother to work day? So Brandon is funny, though, because he's like, yeah, he's like, I can finally go to all the industry parties. Keep whacking your mic.
I know.
Killing all the people at home right now.
I know.
That is,
and now his mic is like totally closer to his mouth. So he's like, okay, much better. Because all of a sudden his levels are way high. I'm going to have to go back over here. But he was like, I can finally go to industry parties and stuff. And I'm like, dude, I've been going to industry parties since I was like 18. Like, they don't. I'm like, wait, you do look a shit ton younger than I did at 18. So fair enough.
All right, fan questions. What do you got?
Fan questions. Here we go. We threw it up on the Insomniac Games forum and the Resistance 3 board, and we asked for some fan questions. So the first is from everybody's favorite, The Con. Screw Kansas State Wildcats. I can say that. That's just for him.
Nice.
How difficult is it to change and adapt your vision to meet the expectation of today's constantly changing consumer landscape? So basically, how do you react to fans changing desires for games, and what do you how do you react to that? Is it when you're thinking?
I think at the end of the day, we are the consumer, that we're changing right along with everybody else. So I don't think that we're like trolling forums and looking for people to say, I love puzzle games this month, and we're suddenly going to make Resistance a puzzle game or something. It's like we're making Resistance, and we at the end of the day aren't going to be. It's not a democracy, right? You have to have a vision. You have to create that vision. But as I mentioned, we're the fan. Like, we play games, and
this to me, like, and one of the side questions I'm going to add to this. There's something about, I think, two zigging while others zag a little bit. For instance, Resistance 3, health packs.
Health packs.
Who the fuck is doing health packs?
And weapon, yeah. And weapon wheel.
And weapon wheel. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, right there you've got two of the most basic mechanics in a shooter. And I think it was like, this is what's right for our game. And particularly with the health thing, we went back and forth for a while. And I remember eventually we were pulling in, I don't know, it was the three of us and a couple of the other senior designers on the project. And, you know, we came in, we had like a big debate one day and walked away. And I was like, all right, let's everyone think about it, come back in a couple days and spend the weekend thinking about it, come back and talk about it. And we came back and it was a unanimous, like, yeah, we should do health facts decision. So it's a lot of it is because of the game that we're making. You know, it's we've got leapers, these little, I mean, the cockroaches of our game, the little,
which have been redesigned too. They look awesome.
They have been redesigned and they're awesome. And when there's like 40 of them, they're really tough. But like individually, they're not super hard to fight. But then, you know, we have some big bosses, have some really big tough enemies. It's not like you're just fighting a dude with a gun the whole game. And I think trying to balance that kind of thing with regenerating health and I think there's just a desire to not have just have something different than the concept of hide behind cover for 5 seconds and you've reset the game. And I think we were looking for just a different feel to the game than that, something that was a little bit more desperate, and that honestly it encourages you to be a little bit more aggressive, because if you just try to hide from everything, eventually you're going to get whittled down and get your ass handed to you, and you have to go out there and face the threat pretty quickly.
Yeah, it forces you to change your strategy. Like, yeah. There's a point where you switch over, and now you have to play a lot more conservative. You have to start thinking about health. You have to do all those things. I'd say another thing is, early on, we were like, you know what? We are going to make sure that everything is exactly the same between multiplayer and single-player campaign. So same health mechanics, same everything. And pretty quickly, you start playing, and you realize, you know what? There's different criteria. The playing multiplayer is very different than playing single player campaign, and so we had to like sort of break our own mantra early on and say regenerative health makes a lot more sense for multiplayer than it does for single player, and we're going to live with that, and because we're going to make the best of those two games that we possibly can. But ultimately it was the game that we defined 3 years ago, what we needed to do to make it the best game, not react to what the general public was looking for.
And I think being true to Resistance, to what our game is, and not being super concerned with what everyone else is doing. I think, you know, everyone here plays a lot of games, and when there's something, you know, when somebody does something cool, we look at it and think about it. But I think it's, I would say we felt very comfortable making what decisions that we thought were right for our franchise, yeah. Not trying to follow what everyone else was doing.
So, I love Portal, but I never once suggested we had a Portal gun in Resistance.
Well, I think like you see that too with, you know, some of the feedback that came in about campaign co-op and wanting that back, and that tied in perfectly, sure. with wanting to focus the game.
Yep.
Weapon wheel obviously was a big thing that people wanted to see back. So I don't think there's ever a situation where we're not listening to what people are saying, but we're always weighing that against what we want to do, what our design for the game is, where we want to take it, also in production realities and technical realities with other things that are going on. There's kind of this amalgamation of three things that all kind of have to be in sync, and sometimes two of those things will outweigh the other one.
I mean, here's an example. We hear it all the time that people are angry that we didn't reissue Resistance 1 with trophies. And the fact of the matter is Resistance 1 was built before trophies existed. We had our own skill point system that we've used since Spyro 1 here at Insomniac. And to go back and retrofit that in is an enormous expense for Insomniac. So it's not like we're trying to screw players out of something they love. We all love trophies. We all like accomplishments. We like doing that thing. As I say, skill points have been around for a long time here at Insomniac. But it just does not make business sense for us to do that.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
It was unbelievable the amount it would cost to actually do it, the amount of time it would take to do it. And you also look at, some people say, well, look at Grand Theft Auto. Well, Grand Theft Auto had achievements, so it's changing a call, basically, and, you know, doing a couple other things. Plus, they were continuing to patch their game at that point. Their code base was still active.
Yeah.
Resistance was dormant by the time, you know, it was dead,
yeah,
packed away, backed up to tape. The engine is, like, different. People are different.
Yep.
There's totally, completely different circumstances. And as much as we would love to put trophies and replay that game and have a platinum in Resistance Fall of Man, it just wasn't practical.
It's not practical.
I just went down to the store and bought myself an actual physical trophy for my mantle that said that I had beat the game and was happy with that.
Was it platinum? Does that.
It was.
All right, let's move on to another question. This is probably a quicker one. Rocket2961 says, is there tracking for quits and incompletes?
So tracking for quits
I'm
and incompletes?
I'm pretty sure there is. I don't know if we're exposing it at this point or not.
Yeah,
I'm almost positive.
We certainly track it. We're not trying to focus on the negatives. But.
Exactly.
Right. So we're not putting that out. If we see that as an issue, that could change. But it's not something that we're messing with at the moment. We're going to see how it goes first.
But you know,
you don't get the you don't get the bonus XP.
Nope.
There's a lot of stuff you don't get if you don't finish the match.
Exactly.
So, you know, it doesn't make sense to quit if you want all the extra XP you're going to get. And it is being tracked in the background. And we may not be displaying it yet, but wouldn't be too hard to display that on a website and discredit someone very easily.
Yeah.
Because
listen,
it is being
kids,
tracked.
If you are losing in a game, just nut up and finish it.
Take
out,
it,
you know,
and get your bonus XP.
Exactly.
Are we tracking alternate fire kills separate from primary fire kills?
We need a special guest appearance for my birthday.
Ryan Schneider.
What?
I think
are you sending in the birthday?
Idea.
Was he drunk already?
How drunk?
Could you give me a drink?
Yeah.
Actually, don't put it in this because can you give me a Cape Cod?
And a vodka soda.
Cape Cod vodka soda.
Come here, Brandon.
Yes.
Come here. Come on in, buddy.
And,
how many drinks have you had?
We got Vidi in here, too. Vidi, get in here.
How many drinks have you had?
He's double fisting. And he has like a piece of.
I didn't have a sangria, but apparently that's.
You put the other one down.
Oh, you're mixing.
Okay, first of all, you got a drink. That is like the blue of that they show when they're trying to sell cruises.
Can somebody take a picture here? This is stupid.
Oh,
wait,
this is,
somebody got him water and bread?
That's got to be a Schneider thing.
Is he in prison?
Water and bread.
He was holding a wine cooler.
His mother's coming tomorrow. She is, yeah.
And I'm the guy that's running the show for it.
I like how the shirt here says, get me a cab. And then turn around.
Exactly.
Ted, remember that the more you drink, the smarter you get. Happy birthday, Ted. This is epic. Yeah, I know. This is good. And we've got May You Visit the Porcelain God, Ryan Schneider.
Yeah, Ryan.
And okay. Happy birthday. Hope you see you, Yak, Cal. Calvin.
Wow.
And nice. My favorite is OMG URDRNK.
James. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Brandon the Beast at the top.
He just said this is the most he's ever drank.
Vodka soda. Wow. Oh, wait, you're going to talk for a second? We are going to let Brandon talk for a second. This podcast is out of control. Oh,
he's trying to put on the microphone over the sombrero.
Yeah, that did not work at all.
I think you need some more bread and water.
What's up, B-Win?
How's it going?
It's Mukata on the Insomniac Full Moon Show. This podcast just went off the rails in the
fan. I love the Full Moon Show.
He says it. He says it so earnestly.
It's
I know.
He
it's
is baking them a cake.
I'm telling you. Yeah, I'm baking cakes. And I'm telling you, Resistance 3 is awesome. There's like this. Yeah, September 6th.
And that is not the liquid.
Welcome
oh my
to God.
Our intern on his 21st birthday, everyone. A big round of applause for Brandon Winfrey, 21 years old, our community intern, and I hope you feel better tomorrow morning.
Oh, yeah. I'll be at work at 10 a.m.
Yeah. I'm not expecting that.
Thanks, Brandon. Thanks, everyone.
And Schneider is getting us more drinks, which is the best thing ever.
Thanks, bud.
Well, he flipped me off. What is that?
In a loving way. In
the American greatest American hero on his T-shirt flips me off. Okay.
Which Brandon doesn't get because he wasn't born when that show was on.
No.
Alternate fire. Are we tracking alt fire kills?
Alt fire kills. Yeah. I mean,
it depends. It depends on the. It depends on the gun. Some of the weapons don't really make sense
kills,
to track, like the auger, which drops the shield. So it depends,
obviously,
on the gun.
Yeah. And any other stat information you'd like to share? Nope, that's okay. He does another question, which is actually from JMW566 on MyResistance.net. How do you feel the downsizing of games from 60 players to 16 players affects the objective modes? We've talked about Chain Reaction a little bit in R3. Previous games focus on big teams, multiple squads. The objective modes we're familiar with required those in order to be successful. Has there been a way to scale down those modes? Well, he lists Assault, Skirmish, and Breach. Or can we expect all new modes? And I think we can expect everything to be kind of retooled for...
Yeah, absolutely. I think the main thing, going back to what Drew said about player choice, is the big one, that when we had the larger numbers, you were constantly being told what to do. Go here, do this. Go here, do this. Go here, do this. And when you have the smaller modes, you're able to freeform a little bit more and kind of play the game that you need to play. You still need to work as a team to be successful.
Especially with those team support abilities. Like, if you use those effectively, you are much better than a group of random people.
On the road to success.
I think the other thing is particularly with objective modes, if you're trying to make modes where everyone ends up in one place, like 30-30, when everyone has like a deployable, becomes a madhouse of probably not much fun. And
do you remember, was it Manchester in Resistance Fall? Man, the last node was inside the tunnels. And you ultimately had like 20 people attacking the tunnel, and the other 20 people inside the tunnel respawning.
Now imagine all those people also being able to drop one or two. Like,
well, not only that, but Manchester was a massive map to begin with. Like, it was.
Thank you, Schneider.
I'll say this now. Probably a little bit. It was probably a little bit big. Even for a 20-on-20 game, the size of that map was massive. So first you had to like sprint your way over to find the maelstrom, and then once you were there, you were immediately devoured by it. So I'm okay with going smaller. I think it's a much, 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 much better game.
Cool. What was the next question? Sorry, I let my iPad close because it's 3% battery. Aaron14 says, will six-axis motion control still be used to remove fire and melee? Does it have any use? And I think we dropped that entirely, especially because it's really hard to remap that to move and sharpshooter.
And a lot of people didn't get it, like, before. Like, especially newer players, you know, they'd come on and, like, more advanced players would have this tactic that wasn't really taught anywhere, you know? Yeah. And so...
Even for me, I knew, but somehow my brain never... quite latched on to shake this thing. So I would see that I got hit by a bullseye tag, and then it would take me a moment, and then I'd start shaking, and it was too late because I would be dead by that point.
Yeah, or if you were caught on fire in R2. Yeah, and like I said,
we've toned down the fire damage, the environmental fire damage considerably as well.
So kind of murder. Rapot says, from working on R3 and All For One, but this is an R3 group, so we're working on R3. What are your thoughts on 3D? Worth it? Not worth it? Pain in the ass?
It was easy for me.
I would say that early on, when we first started talking about it, and when it first started getting implemented, I would say pain in the ass. And then Al Hastings worked his Al Hastings magic, and he turned it into something that is really actually quite awesome. I want to play it that way.
Yeah, I would say Marcus and I were both dubious of 3D at the start, and I gotta say I think it's cool. Like it's a different experience, and I think it's pretty neat. Yeah.
I will just tell you guys that the thing said about 3D at this Womanheim from this group of people was not anywhere near what you just heard. So that is how transformative getting it into the game and playing it in the game is.
Getting it right.
Actually things, awesome.
Things like I mean, the thing that always stands out is that where you place the HUD in depth, it makes all the difference. Because I think a lot of people initially just put it in the front. But then your eye has to constantly go from depth to up front. And you strain your eyes so much you get a headache really quickly. And what Al did was basically say, well, who does HUDs really well? 3D sports casting. Mm-hmm. So he went and looked at like how FIFA was displaying World Cup and everything, and ESPN and everything. And they put it about a third of the way in. And he tried that, and he started, you know, he changed it around a little bit more. But it really works well. Like the HUD is there a little bit in depth, but not far enough or not close enough that it's giving you a headache. So, kudos, hats off to Al Hastings.
As always,
again. Still.
Dark magic from Al. With Capelli, also from Rapbot, with Capelli traveling cross-country and there's no boat to be found, will Capelli ride a donkey or horse in desperate times? I actually think the bigger problem is there's no waterway from, like, the Mississippi to New York, so that would pose a problem in and of itself. Well, I guess this is true alternate history. I would say, and I'm going to answer this question, I would say our first teaser trailer might be a good indication, like, you should go
I'll
back
go a step further and say there will not be a donkey.
There's no donkey.
Although, good. You know how I feel about miniature donkeys.
You do love miniature donkeys.
So, I know that. But I do want to talk about this, because there's a section that was cut from the game where you actually were fighting on a VTOL.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes. Can we talk about that? Because there was like these flying chimera creatures that would attack it, and you had the Magnum.
It's about removed from the board behind us, but it was there at one time.
We had Chi Lao did an amazing previz animation for it.
You were awesome. This was taking you from St. Louis to Pennsylvania, and it's done by a cinematic now. I mean, there's a cinematic that transitions there, and it was going to be an interactive sequence, and you were going to be kind of climbing, I guess, getting attacked first by flyer sort of feral chimera,
which are in the game still,
and then they're more ambient than enemies,
right?
Yeah. Ambient. Yep.
And you were going to climb out, and it was sort of going to be an on rail sequence, largely on rails as far as your movement, but you were going to have a camera control and aiming control and trying to battle these things off the VTOL and
while flying,
and the previz was awesome. And we were super into it, and ultimately, I think what defeated it was campaign co-op.
Yep.
It was just we kept wrestling with, you know, do both players move on like opposite sides of the VTOL, but in the exact same fashion, or do we leave like one in the VTOL trying to do support? And we messed around with some different things and just didn't come up with a good answer. And it's one of those things where, you know what, if we were making a purely single-player game, probably would have done it, probably would have been awesome. Just didn't fit with a feature we had. And I'll say that's one of the hardest things in game development is because I think that sequence could have been really cool for a single player. But, like, you got to remember, like, you know what, that's not the game we're making. We're making a game with campaign co-op. And you've got to respect those big decisions you make. And if you start trying to shoehorn too much, I think you ultimately are going to weaken the whole experience.
Yep, totally agree. That was at the end of the day, we didn't want to make the second player do something stupid. I mean, I keep thinking about that semi truck driving game where the second player honks the horn.
So, Oh, the one thing I was going to say about that before I move on to the next question was the one thing that bothered me about that sequence always was that Capelli was shooting these things off the thing, and he was basically shooting his Magnum right at the hull and engine of the VTOL.
That was another.
And I was always like, but why? But like, if he misses, they're going down. And that
well,
always
not only that, there was a the flyers were actually ripping apart the plane because we're kind of using as inspiration the. That Twilight Zone episode where William Shatner sees the gremlin ripping the plane apart.
Right, right.
Or John Lithgow in the 80s remake.
Or the Minox on the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, dear. Oh,
my.
But even in the previs, it looked like you were the one accidentally blowing up your own VTOL engine when it was actually the flyers tearing it apart. So, there's that.
All right, let's keep rolling here. Long legs. Can we get a sneak hint or preview of unknown Chimera type or weapons? No, but there was a slight preview. If you know where to look in this podcast, someone said something that kind of hinted at that. But that's all I'm going to say. Might have been. To all of you, what is your favorite gun in the game? And keep in mind, there's
that
only
which ones we've talked about or not talked about.
But I can cut it out if you say it.
How many Billy Idol songs are we going to hear out there?
That is Carrie's favorite.
This is the third.
I think that is this the no. It was a White Wedding earlier. This is the second time we've heard Rebel Yell today.
It might be twice. Second time.
This is Rebel Yell twice. Yeah. Okay.
Carrie loves Rebel Yell.
You can cut us out, right?
Oh yeah.
What is the gun that we have not announced yet? My favorite gun. I'm looking on the board behind James to see what. I think effect wise I really like the Mutator. You know, I think again it was an idea that was okay, and just the implementation is so much more awesome than what I thought it would be that I really like that gun, especially when you get the first upgrade and instead of just kind of collapsing they basically turn into leeches. They turn into these mutating bombs and run towards the nearest enemy and will explode up and explode when they get near them. And when that happens and it infects like four other guys, it's just so, so satisfying. It's not the most like precise gun. It's not the most machine gunny kind of awesome gun. But like when that happens, it's something that's so different from anything else that I've seen in other games.
And that's a good point. Leeches, we haven't shown actually at this point, but they are back. We can say that.
Sure.
Leeches. They're the nasty, more infected grins. And I think we may have said the Mutator turns people into leeches.
Did we have leeches in Resistance 2?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Remember, there were the frogs that ran at you.
Do you remember the big battle in Chicago? They would run at you, especially. There was that horrible sequence where you get
totally
past the stalkers, you're like, thank God, and then a leech would kill you. You're like, fuck!
Yep.
God damn it! And
they were not used very heavily, but they were used in that battle.
They're better now, though, for sure. They're much better now, but they were kind of first around. I would say they're like in their prototype state in Resistance 2.
Yeah, they looked very different. I had forgotten that we did have those.
I'm going to take the politically soft answer.
Oh, he's going with the bullseye. Jesus Christ.
No, I'm not.
Oh, you're not?
I am not going to select a favorite because my point is when I play the game, how awesome it is to switch guns around. That if you're not switching guns, if you're like, I like this gun only and I'm rolling with it, you're getting a filtered version of the game. It's awesome to go through and be like, here's a situation. Let me try this gun or let me try this gun.
And that takes you to the Ratchet kind of scenario in that like as soon as you level a gun all the way up, I stop using it. like, oh, this gun's super powerful now, but I don't want to waste
experience
points.
I'm going to say that for the end of the game.
Yeah
I'm going to say that.
There are guns like the Atomizer I love. I use that sparingly. I know when it's most useful, and the Altfire especially is like I save those things for the magical time, and I know if I don't want to fight this particular section, I'm going to throw out an Altfire, and I'm going to let it do my fighting for me.
Which is an interesting design challenge, because part of the reason Resistance 2 went two-weapon was we always had people like, oh, they get Hailstorm ammo, and they're just hoarded.
Sure.
It's that Resident Evil issue almost, where I think that's the best example of it in recent gaming. It's like you get the rockets, and you're like, nope, need that for a boss, and I'm not going to touch that. I'm not going to touch my Magnum ammo. Like, unless it is critical, I'm not pulling that out. Mm-hmm. So there's always that fine balance.
I think it's actually tough from both standpoints. I think players have a tendency to hoard them, and I think designers have a tendency to be like, don't ruin my setup.
Exactly.
and you know, we went in and I think there was definitely, I know that in design meetings several times I was like, listen, we can't be that precious. Like, we're going to have a certain amount of atomizer alt fires and it's just like, let that setup go. If there's a big setup you've got that's just perfectly crafted and everybody's doing what you want, and they throw out the atomizer alt fire and it destroys everyone, that's okay. Like, that's well, a powerful feeling. That's yeah, using
it. Right. And players it's recognize fun. It when they see the setup, and they're like, oh, shit, this is going to be a bitch. And if your setup is that beautiful and hard-looking that they feel like they have to do it, and then they wipe it out, that's a great feeling. Like,
well, that's the thing. It has to be a certain criteria. Right? The atomizer alt-fire is limited by proximity. And that so if you get the right setup where you're like, hell yeah, I just murdered like 30 dudes, yeah, it's an awesome feeling. It makes me as a player feel like super powerful.
Especially like in the E3 demo where they're floating around in the air and lit on fire from the shotgun, and you just see this like flaming hybrid spinning around and around. You're like, fuck yeah, bitches. I'm awesome.
Yeah.
Cam, you need to answer favorite weapon.
My old faithful would be the Magnum. You know, that's the one I save.
How many games have the Magnum as the most powerful weapon? Besides Halo 1.
Besides what?
Halo 1.
Yeah.
You know, I like the... I will say my for Half-Life 2, which is probably my favorite game of all time, I'd say the Magnum and the crossbow are my favorite guns in that game. The Magnum is pretty powerful, but it does not have the explosive secondary or the upgrade that kicks off more explosions.
Yeah, that's true. So, Cam, did you want to elaborate?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. I mean, that's it right there. I mean, you don't have a ton of ammo for it, so it is, you know, you want to use it sparingly. But, yeah, I save it for those tough moments. You know, I save it for the boss or, like...
It's especially effective against a brawler. Like,
yeah, definitely.
Key weapon. And it's funny watching people play because they don't realize that. Like, wait, I'm fighting this boss. I shouldn't pull my pistol out. But, no, you should.
Yep.
That's actually one... I will say that's one interesting thing in the playtest that we honestly were never really able to overcome, which is, you know, the first two guns we give you are the Bullseye and the Magnum, and I think everyone at Insomniac uses the Magnum really heavily in those first few levels because it is very powerful. And when we would do focus tests, players wouldn't get how powerful it was.
Certainly less likely.
We watched some press play through the boat demo, and like, what are these flares? And we're all just sitting there, like, watching them play through it live, like, what the hell? And I'm texting, like, the editor-in-chief, like, what the hell? Like, they're asking, like, these flares are sticking around for a long time. I'm just like, please, press R2 well, and
fortunately,
blow them up.
Fortunately, we've got training to show players what they
I
want to
come back to that, actually, because I think it's a really interesting thing that we did really well in Resistance 3 that we didn't do in the previous two games is every weapon, almost, some with gated situations where you actually have to do it design-wise before the gate opens and allows you to continue. Other situations, not quite as much, but between those training situations, the weapon journals that describe it, the videos in the weapon journals that show it being used, and these videos we're going to try and post online over the course of the beta and have them all hosted kind of on My Resistance as a weapons tutorial.
Yeah.
Our weapon training is phenomenal compared to the previous games.
Thanks, James. So much better than it was. And I think a big thing of that was part of that was working with Bill Fulton, our the consultant we use for usability testing. But a lot of that is you know, Sony would do did things after Resistance 1 and Resistance 2, kind of getting feedback and it basically whether or not you like or I guess whether or not you think Resistance is awesome. With Resistance 1 and 2 basically came down to, did you understand the weapons or not? And people who were like, just use the primary fire, never use secondary fire, never use any of the exotic guns, were like, yeah, it's an okay shooter. People who used all that stuff were like, this game is awesome. And I think that it's just trying to expose that kind of open that door to the awesome.
I would say that was the fight that I was involved in the most during the course of the game was – the debate over whether you start a game with a bang and you just throw somebody into the middle of the action like we did with Resistance 1, or if you take the time... What's that?
And 2, really, to some aspect, too.
Yeah, we tried a little bit more training in that, but we tried it...
We trained the Magnum.
We tried training while you were in the under fire, and it was a little more muddy. And this time it was like, you know what? No, we're going to start the game specifically, purposefully slow to establish the world... Train, make sure you know how to use the weapons before we put you into any action.
And I'll say, like if we were putting out a demo of the first level, like it's like, yeah, the first 10 minutes.
We just ran into this because we're sent preview code out. And normally you say you can capture the first 20 minutes of the game. So like a lot of websites do that. They play the first 20 minutes of the game live. And we usually also set 20 minutes, and we go about 25 minutes out to set a marker point. Like
you absolutely
cannot go past this point in case they're really fast or something. And the problem is that, again, you hit the training, it's a lot of world building, so we had to go even further out this time for R3 and say, look, if you want to get into some action and be able to show people the weapons and stuff like that, we need to give them 30, 35 minutes of the game, because that first 15 minutes is very training,
it's an interesting dilemma, because, like, yeah, it makes the first 10 minutes slow.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. But again, there are a lot of, obviously there's a lot of games that do it really well. I thought Half-Life, especially as a PC game, Half-Life 2 did a good job of kind of like introducing you in slowly. Assassin's Creed 1, that game is like an hour and a half of training and world building.
Well, and even though Assassin's Creed sometimes, like, you're hitting training 8, 9, 10 hours into the game.
Yeah.
And Final Fantasy 13 was the same way, where you'd learn something brand new that was integral to the combat system 10 hours into the game, and they would suddenly train you on it and send you into a battle where you had to use it and train you for it.
I don't think it's that unusual. I think it's very unusual for Insomniac.
Yeah.
Like, Insomniac's all about the big explosion, the big thing right away, and it was I think it was a big departure, but I think ultimately it's 10 minutes that changes how people play the game over the next 8 or 9 hours and makes the experience much better.
It's vital.
All right, let's keep rocking through these, because we've been in here for a while, but I know people are going to love this podcast, because I'm loving it. When can we expect next show of gameplay? Well,
when's Ryan coming back to serve us more drinks?
I don't know.
I think he gave up on you
guys. I can send him an email for my drink order, please. And this is a vodka tonic, which is bullshit. I need to send him back out for that. When can we expect the next showing of gameplay? Well, we sent preview builds out. There'll be some footage from that. We're going to show some stuff around Comic-Con time. We'll announce more about that closer. When did the idea for a more post-apocalyptic survival-based resistance instead of a militaristic one come up?
That's
a good question.
pretty early, whenever we knew who the team was going to be. Having looked at my notes recently, it was things like, we want to feel like we're part of a resistance. We want to see the condition of humanity in these circumstances. We want to emphasize, you know, what can only happen in resistance, and that differentiates us from everything else. I think really early on.
So right off the bat, I'm going to skip the rest of your question. Sorry, because we are like way over what I projected, but that's great because people love that. Quick one from the con. Who chose the pink controller? You saw us using it during every demo at E3.
Pink controller seemed to be a big deal, one way or another. Pink controller. Okay, so we have a bunch of pink controllers in the office that were from, I don't know, Vlad probably ordered them through IT or something. We specifically took our own test kit down to the rehearsals for E3, and we brought the pink controller on purpose because no one else has it, so it'd be easy to find your controller
and our unit, hopefully.
when it's all over. I think just before I went on, somebody said, "Hey, are you sure you want to use that pink controller?" And I was like, "I don't care, whatever. It's a controller. Nobody cares."
People cared.
It was like three pages on Gaff about this. It was awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad people love it or hate it. Whatever. Well, I was surprised at the reaction to the cheap seats line, which people thought was a joke of some sort.
It was a joke.
Well, it was a joke, but it was like people took it as like a cut down.
Yeah, like you were insulting the cheap seats.
Well, so they don't. First of all, I don't think that people understand that was in the L.A. Convention Center or the LA Sports Arena.
Yeah, which basically is like the old basketball arena.
The old basketball arena. And those cheap seats, or nosebleed seats, as we used to call them, were really far away. Like at the rehearsal, I went up to the furthest one I could possibly find, and the stage was just a little dot. It was terrifying. But I don't think I was making a joke as much as just being transitory. Like, I was talking to everybody and just being like, everybody with me? Cool. All right, move on. But also, I was scared shitless, man.
Everything went out the window. Like, you were going to tell people to put on their 3D glasses. You didn't even put on your own 3D glasses.
Like, people were mad at me because I didn't do that. There were 6,000 people staring at me when I got on a stage. And to put that in perspective, if people are familiar
with
the... Well,
and like a million people watching online, too.
That doesn't really get you as much. Yeah. Right? Like, that's just conceptual.
I
mean, still.
I will say, as one of the people watching from the nosebleed section, even with or without my 3D glasses, you looked flat because you were so far away from me.
I was flat. But so 6,000 people, I was saying it's nervous to get up in front of like your high school class. Now imagine 200 high school classes in front of you. It's kind of nerve-wracking. So I was scared. But I wasn't trying to make a joke at the expense of people who didn't pay as much for the free show that was happening.
Right. So. The people in the cheap seats were the ones who were hanging out outside too long, eating all the free food truck
food. That's true.
Hmm. Well, India Jones.
Anyway,
so
I was not trying to make a joke. I was not trying to insult anybody. I'm sorry if you took offense, and I'm sorry if you don't understand what the term cheap seats.
And the pink controller was awesome, except for when a bunch of G4 booth babes picked it up, accidentally screwed up a setting in Resistance 3 seconds before the live demo because they're taking a photo with it, causing me to die on live television because I set the enemies to invisible and not my invincible. Not invisible. They are already invisible. I set them to invisible and not myself. Which, when I shot one for the fifth time with the fucking sniper rifle and he doesn't die, yeah. I was just like, oh, shit. Right is like, they're like, oh, so what are we looking at right here as I die so and go to the debug menu. To try and turn.
So
like,
this is the section of the show where we apologize for our embarrassing moments. Drew, next.
Well, no, I want to talk about your apology cupcake. Or, no, I'm sorry, muffin.
Muffin, the apology,
muffin.
The apology muffin.
This is the point of the project where I apologize to everyone. I'm sorry, muffin of forgiveness.
This is the point in the project where a lot of people come up to me and
Okay, wait.
Yeah, please.
Is this Rebel Yell again?
Yeah,
no, this is Dancing, no, Dancing with Myself, but this is already played earlier.
Okay, I thought this was the third time for Rebel Yell.
No, this is the second time for both. This is the point of the project where people come up to me and either... they have to have more work because of something that there's a bug, and they come up and want to take the easy way out, and it's like, no, this is better for the game. Or something they thought was really important didn't make it into the game, and they're just now noticing. So I just have a muffin up on my wall with a sign that says, this is the chocolate muffin of apology. I'm very, very sorry. And I just point at it.
I think it's actually, I'm very, 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 very sorry.
But that's what it comes down to, because over the course of the project, I've pissed a lot of people off for various reasons, because I'm a teddy bear of some sort, and I've always used a cupcake of apology, or a muffin of apology, because our kitchen is stocked with those Otis Spunkmeyer awful, god-awful muffins. We're not sponsored by Otis Spunkmeyer, are we? I hope we're sponsored by Don Fuliano Tequila.
I don't know if I'm supposed to pronounce this guy Trisly or T-R-L-S-L-Y, whatever. Do you feel multiplayer is balanced with all the new kill streaks and abilities?
Oh, yes, definitely.
What are we saying now?
Yes. One of the big things that, for me, is like trying to get all the weapons from SP into MP, and get them balanced. I think we did a good job of that. We have some very exotic weapons, and trying to balance those against, your standard rifle and things like that. It's like how, it's a challenge. I think we toned back the berserks, our kill streaks in this game. So like they do have an impact, but they are not going to ruin the game, it's like
they won't automatically take you to the next kill streak.
Exactly. No. Exactly.
Well, and that's the thing, is as a player in other games that have kill streaks, a lot of times I just get murdered from the sky. That's there's something that is suddenly able to kill me, and the kill streaks that we have, they basically augment the player's abilities as they are. So if I see that somebody has an ability,
and
I
you
can
will
run.
Either they're cloaked, right, and they're doing something, and you can generally see them slightly when they're cloaked doing, and they're starting to fire at you. They have a shield. Oh, that's obvious. Right. They have an auger. That's right. Obvious. And bolts are flying through the wall at you, or they've put up an auger shield, or they're a ravager or a combat armor, and they're big with a grenade launcher. And you're like, oh shit, I need to change my tactics.
Yeah, I can change my tactics.
And, I'll say that was a late change. Like we had things that were. Yeah. More indirect, more world oriented for quite a while until around Community Day, and I can't remember what it was. Some of us had some conversations with some fans, and I think a lot of feedback from Community Day was people were concerned about, like,
definitely,
I don't like being killed out of the sky by
streaks.
By whatever kind of missile drops down and stuff like that. And it was like, let's take a look at how these modify the player themselves instead of sort of taking you into this like whole different perspective and a whole different sort of remote killing. And it's like they should be something that modify the player. Player is still vulnerable. And
he can still fumble,
And like you can totally fumble.
And that's cool. I do it's all like the time. A lot of times, like, you get killers. these
berserks, and yeah, you can wreck face with them. But you know, there's that occasional time you'll pop it at the wrong time, and some dude just happened to be behind you when you did it, and he has the jump on you. Or like in cases like the riot shield, you know, there's an exposed side, so it's only powerful from the front. If someone's able to flank you, you know, they can take you down. So there's a lot of, yeah, I fumble often.
I'd say it augments what you can do, but none of them are. None of them feel cheap to me.
No.
There's something you have to react to. Like, you're like, oh, shit, this guy has something powerful right now. Oh, yeah. But it's not like I can't win.
No.
It's a, I have to change how I'm going to approach this guy and move a rat, flank him, or retreat a little bit.
Or like, I've got to play defensively against that guy for 15 seconds because he's super powerful. And if he sees me, he's going to win. But I will say, as someone who's not a particularly great player, like, I don't feel like I'm getting cheated into deaths. Yeah. So,
cool. Well, I think that answers that. And I mean, we'll continue to address things too as we see from the beta. So it's not like what we're going to ship is final. The beta is going to what happens during the beta will be patched, it'll be updated, and what we learn from the beta is also going into a day one patch for R3, which is going to bring all the learnings from the beta into R3.
I don't know what you're talking about. All I know is that what happens in the beta stays in the beta.
Like what happens in this
conference.
I was wondering
why you were making a virtual muffin of apology to the fans.
Longlegs asks, this guy named Longlegs, what is the reasoning for a loadout based multiplayer versus a weapon spawn one? And
we tried that too.
Did you feel like it was a risk changing much of the content, like the Lark to the Firestorm, the Titan to the Brawler, which wasn't really a change from a Titan to a Brawler. I mean, an evolution, a different type of game. But let's go back to the main thing. What is, you know,
two totally
versus
different questions? Yeah. I mean, with the weapons, we actually tried weapon pads for a while. And I don't know what to say because it didn't feel right.
I think it what it degenerates to is the people who know the map the best dominate the map, and it creates a false sense of flow in the map, in the layout. And, you know, ultimately it just didn't work. And I think the loadout, the way we did loadouts, especially with the abilities and augmenting your own playstyle, just works so much better for it.
Iteration.
Iteration.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is.
It's the answer to everything.
Well, and I think, like, you know, some of the changing the Lark to the Firestorm and, you know, I mean, I think especially the Far Eye to the Dead Eye was almost a lot of concern. Well, we don't want to have this sniper rifle where the secondary fire is a slowdown effect and then go to multiplayer and it doesn't
It doesn't work.
Or co-op. I mean, we had co-op and we had it in R1 where it was like, you have the Dead Eye and the alt fire slow down time, but then you're in your co-op, you can't do that.
And I think...
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I think the original impetus was we don't want an instant win button, which is with bosses and things like that, where it's like slow down, shoot six sniper shots into the weak spots, and just win.
Plus, there was the practical thing of we're doing a game where the theme is humans have their backs against the wall, so how are we going to supply ammo constantly?
Yeah.
Make those Chimeran weapons. Now you know where you can get that ammo
from other snipers.
I feel like this podcast is really degenerated.
Do you really?
I feel like with it's the drinks. Just getting started.
Oh, I think it's really good, actually.
Should just start over right now.
Like, can we get another order in here?
Schneider, you still have a little bit left. Finish that, and then I'll think
that's
about emailing
ice, though. That's like,
pour some more tequila for this man, and make him sip it this time.
Or, we've also got the Maker's 46.
I know, I should have stuck with tequila. Nice peppery.
So going back to our intern, he's like, I bought some scotch last night, because I feel like I have to start drinking a manly drink.
No.
And then he was like, I was like, what'd you buy? And he's like, I can't remember what he said. He's like, yeah, it was the cheapest one. I'm like, dude,
like
Scotch
when
starts
when I was,
at McKellen.
When I will say, what kind of tequila are we drinking tonight?
Don Fulano.
I'll say at age 19, I was drinking Torado tequila, which I'm sure you've never heard of. It comes in plastic bottles.
Nice.
I think it was like 2 liters for around $11.99.
That's a deal. Yeah.
This is probably before most of the people who are listening to the podcast were born. But...
You see
each gray whisker in my beard was the night that I threw up Torado tequila when I was in college.
I think as far as tequila goes, everybody had the same bad, or a lot of people had the same bad experience, which is called Jose Cuervo. They're not sponsored either. And then recently, like in the last 10 years, Patron kind of made tequila a better tequila, 100% blue agave tequila that was pretty good. They've gone downhill. They're not what they used to be.
You get all the high-end Patron, it's okay.
Favorite tequilas.
My Reposado Don Filano is my favorite tequila.
I don't know enough.
Herradura Añejo.
Nice. Sylvia's is what's that called? Doesn't matter. Cut it out.
It definitely degenerated because
see, it totally
about
degenerated. There.
I know because I can
anyway
because you got into alcohol.
Long legs.
We normally don't drink.
Back to long legs.
No, his questions are answered.
What was the second question?
It was about the firestorm and the weapon changes, and then the Titan. Well, the Titan was just like once you learned how to strafe them correctly.
Titan was a bullet sponge, and especially when you're talking about co-op. It's if it's just taking damage, it's no fun.
We wanted something more interesting. We wanted more skill based.
Something in your face.
Something that could get you anywhere.
Okay, so a quick one here, and I think this is very subjective. Tricky Legs asks, in Resistance Fall of Man, the team with the best strategy in the world
wins. Wait, what was that? What was that?
Tricky Legs? What?
Yeah, that's his name, Tricky Legs.
Okay, definitely an enemy for the next game.
In Resistance Fall of Man, a team with the best strategy in the world wouldn't stand a chance against opponents with significantly better aiming skills and little to no strategy. I'd say it was 70 to 80% aiming and 20 to 30% strategy in RFOM. Has the addition of active and passive abilities and the change in objective modes in Resistance 3 changed that percentage ratio? Basically, he wants to know is strategy more important or is pure skill in a first-person shooter more important in Resistance 3?
I will say that when I load in the game with the default loadout, I still feel powerful. I feel like I can take down people that I'm genuinely better at, which isn't very many, unfortunately. But strategy is super important. Like, figuring out your loadout is going to be very important. It's going to make you a better player.
What do you think, Cam?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an even bit of both, honestly. Like, I don't think it swings too far in either direction. I mean, you got to be able to shoot someone in the head and shoot someone in the body.
And headshots are critical. Like,
and they definitely have a lot more weight in this game than normal. Than
Resistance 2, and Resistance 1, similar, maybe a little bit more.
Aiming's really important.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a skill. But, you know, again, like, we have abilities like bubble shields. If you pop that at the right time, I mean, you're safe. Like, no amount of skilled shooting is going to help that player
unless they
out.
Throw an EMP grenade at
exactly. It. And then, you know, we have a lot of back and forth like that. A lot of counters, a lot of ways to deal with different situations.
And considering you can change your loadout on the fly, if you run into a team that's spamming bubble shields, EMP grenade,
exactly.
All of a sudden, like, you change the tide and maybe they're not going to use it. So there's some strategy almost in-game. Game too when people are trying to quickly change what they're loading with.
Oh, this is at least a dance remix.
Yeah.
I'll say like personally, I think it's largely like skill based as far as aiming and things like that. I think the older people. Like Marcus, you mentioned.
How old?
Yeah, like your age, dude.
Oh. Old.
I'm older than you, so I can say that. I think that like some of the sometimes there are things that happen in the game, and it's like if you're not playing a lot, it's like that. It's that you were mentioning this earlier with the original multiplayer. It was like it takes that second, like I need to do this now, and it's like sometimes it's like if you're not playing a lot, it's like. Bubble shield can't get around that. instead of like, all right, man, it's time to sprint or dash forward or like EMP grenade or like go somewhere else for 5 seconds and then come back.
I still fall for the electric hula hoop, which is not called the electric hula hoop. It's called the lightning shield, but people can throw it out and it will. If I melee somebody who has the lightning shield on, I will take damage. I fall for it every time because my brain is so hardwired. Sorry. Wow. Tequila is catching up. To when I'm close to an enemy, I melee. That's what I do. That's what my fingers do, and I fall for it every time. I'll see it, and I'll go, no, fingers, no! And
I remember watching someone at E3, and I saw someone with the electric hula hoop.
Yeah.
I mean, lightning shield up, and like he was running up behind him. I was like, don't do it. Whack, and like half his health went away, and he was like, huh, that was weird. He whacked him again and died. I was like, bravo, you just killed yourself.
That may have been me.
So good. Oh, and that's with QA, like, sandbagging, too. If you ever play against QA at a convention, they're trying not to kill you.
I dare you to play against Dominique.
The next game we're making, we're banning Lightning Shield and just saying electric hula hoop.
Absolutely.
Foxman 250, what were improvements upon the last two games in the series that you would wanted to make ever since the beginning of development on R3? And this also ties into Longleg's next question. What would you say were the first objectives, primary goals, original ideas? We already talked about that a little bit, the road trip idea. Yeah, sure. So, well, I mean, I think more important this for both of these questions is what were the, you know, what were the things you really wanted to improve upon from the first two games?
I think a lot of it Drew touched upon before, but Resistance 1, if you played with the alt-fires, if you played with all of the weapons, you got a lot more out of it. And so I think for us, bringing back the weapon wheel because we wanted player choice from day one made a lot of sense. But then the addition of the upgrade system just made it all the better because now you're wanting to experiment with all the weapons. You're wanting to try to level up all of the weapons. I think from early on, I think Drew was, again, pushing a big proponent of the upgrade system, and that worked out perfectly. That was really good.
And I'll say on the upgrade, actually, like, originally we were talking a lot more upgrades and a lot more sort of, I was talking,
right,
a lot more levels, a lot more stat-based, and, you know, like, a little bit more ammo, a little bit more, you know, carry more clips, faster reload, things like that, and we went down that road, and enough people came to me that were like, you know what, this doesn't feel Insomniac.
Yeah.
Like, the numbers increases just don't feel special enough. And I'll say, like, for a little while, it took me a while to be convinced, but yeah, ultimately it was like, you know what? Yeah. We need to take what we've got and build on what we've got, but make it, like, distinctly different and make it behave differently instead of just making sort of behind the scenes number changes and with the upgrades. And I think that worked out really well, and I think that's something that speaks volumes to Insomniac, because people were, that was really what people said, were like, this does not feel like the Insomniac way to upgrade weapons. And
well, and talk about the power of Insomniac, it was basically based off of the Ratchet 2 upgrade system, which none of us worked on.
Right,
like, we all were just fans of the franchise, and especially of that particular one worked really, really well for us. So you know, kudos Insomniac.
All right, so we're coming on. We're almost at 90 minutes on this thing. So I'm going to go to the lightning round. Ding, ding,
yeah,
ding,
for the
that's
people
Ajax
who
going to spin the wheel for the final.
For those of you who have nothing better to do with your lives.
Well, and people have been dying for a Resistance 3 podcast, so hopefully there's tons of enlightening aspects on this, and I'm sorry we haven't done more. Shipping two games is crazy. So Desert Fox, what are the objective modes? Well, we can't say all of them. We talked a little bit about them earlier. They're new, but there's definitely some inspiration from the old barebone modes with no abilities or berserks.
We'll have custom games.
We have private games. There may at some point be like a special ranked playlist that eliminates some of those things. It may or may not be permanent. We'll kind of see how things go. You know, when you search for game modes in matchmaking, you can search objective versus non-objective. This is the next question. You can search smaller games versus the full 16-player games. So those are all options, and not having a private game browser allows us to funnel everyone into matchmaking, which should hopefully make for a much better experience. Furthermore, having smaller game sets also should make it much easier to find ranked games. So we'll continue to tweak this over the course of the beta, but we're pretty stoked about that. Beta. When the beta starts, we're gonna have a blog post about that. That'll already.
Christ, James, we don't even need to be here.
The next question was also about objective game modes. What kind of things will you see in DLC? I think it's safe to say there will be DLC, but we're not going to get into that right now.
It's gonna be no. I will not let you get away with that.
This podcast is really degenerated, Drew.
We're gonna do some awesome things in DLC.
Thank you.
We're excited.
Definitely.
There's some cool stuff. It's, of course, being worked on as soon as the game is finished. We're thinking about that and planning that right now.
I think now that we're playing Def Leppard, things have degenerated as low as they can go.
Don't
even make me pull out my imitation.
And that's where my iPad runs out of juice.
So I guess we end. If the iPad dies, we all do.
Yeah, the iPad dies, and I'm sorry if we didn't get to your question. But, hey, you got a 90-minute Resistance 3 podcast, which... Hopefully it doesn't make up for not having podcasts the last 6 months.
Just PM Jay Stevenson on the website.
As always. Or just post in the questions for Insomniac thread on the Insomniac Games.
Sure. Actually, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay, sure. Please do.
Who's your unsung hero on Resistance 3? Developer.
Single unsung
hero? And why? Yeah.
James Gonzalez. because he is our integration expert, our integration programmer, who had to take all of the discs and demos and everything that we did.
PKG files.
And he was awesome. He held it all together. I can't even count the number of emails I got from him at like 4 a.m. and 5 a.m. and he was awesome. So as far as support development, James by far awesome guy.
But Cameron?
There were a lot of other people.
I think it would probably have to be a pair. It would probably be Adam Newton-Chester and Steve Ryder. You know, like they went above and beyond. You know, they took an idea and just made it amazing. You know, and like. It's like that effort, like just all the feedback with the enemies and how they have their tubes that pop out. You can shoot their heat packs off and you shoot their limbs off.
It's cool when their heat pack goes over the top and they explode. Like, it's fucking rad.
The amount of feedback. You know, we have our grim zombies can crawl on the ground with their legs shot off. You know, there's just like, there's so many awesome little details with those.
And that we actually had time for, like, to do the polish stuff. And like, it goes back to that 3-year thing we were talking about where it's like, before I'd be like, oh shit, I can't do any more with the grims. Because I got to move on to like the heat stack thing. I got to move on to this enemy, and now it's like, oh wait, I could add like this cool thing with the grim crawling at you.
And that's the thing; it's very easy to say no, and like because it's you know, but to like take the time and just investigate and see if it's possible, and like have that attitude is just big. You know, it makes it a better game.
And both those guys are so, I think both those guys are so into games, and both those guys are such game players that they want. I think both of them come at making the game very much from a player perspective, and it's like, whatever you just said sounds cool. Let's figure out a way to get it into the game.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, what about you, Drew? Dead air.
Dead air. Yeah.
Did you ask this question?
I did ask this question, but he said Cameron stole my answer. Okay, I asked it before, honestly, before thinking about it. And I was going to say Adam. I'm going to say Lisa Brown.
Okay,
damn it.
Done.
Is my
that was mine.
Oh, nice.
Sorry, you keep thinking. I'm going to say Lisa Brown was my hero on this game for a number of reasons. I think when she came in, you know, she was an intern and she worked on Resistance 2. Right at the tail end and saved our bacon in a number of ways on certain levels. But
this is Wordle.
Wordle online.
Yeah, exactly, online. She came in and did the boat level and took over the last level of the game and also another level of development. She
fucking
is.
Hate Drew for making me edit this so much here. Whatever.
Did we mention that James is getting Ryan's getting married?
Oh yeah.
Sorry.
She's we brought her straight out of school. She was at the ETC at Carnegie Mellon, and I have never seen anyone rally a group of people around them like Lisa has. And a year or so ago when I was doing her review, I commented, she has totally changed the way that I think about working with people. And I've never seen anyone like get a group of people so invested and so excited and have such an iterative and sort of communal group as she has done. And she's made some very questionable levels that we were like, could we even do this into just outstanding experiences in our game? Like our boat. I mean, clearly our big demo that we've been pushing out is the boat level, and that was, she came in and we were like, yeah, like it's on water and it should be really cool, and you're like on a boat, and you know, we gave a couple beats, sell the world, and she totally sold the world,
definitely.
And the way she went from like. What she started with was honestly like just absolute garbage, and she and the team took it to just took it to magic.
Yeah.
And
I would call out Craig Goodman on that team that he did a really good job of envisioning the world as well.
So absolutely, absolutely.
James.
Well, I'm going to go with Matt Siaglia and Ryan Kamens, who are just the AV Club.
Yeah.
They've put together so many crazy random requests, and from our side, they've done so many motion graphics, and they've gotten the cutscenes looking amazing, and doing 3D versions of them all. And those guys work tirelessly and are over there all the time doing stuff that, you know, sometimes is very monotonous and waiting for things. But
I'd add Grant Hollis to that list.
Yeah, and I'd add Grant Hollis to that list as well, the art director. But since he's the art director, he's more sung hero. But, like, Ryan's work on the post and... Yeah. Honestly, like, you turn off all our posts, like, and that's one of the big focuses for R3. You turn off the post, and you're like, I had to turn the post back on. You're like, all right, like, this is amazing.
And worked a lot on the, like, the all the iron sights and scopes, like, the Chimera and iron sights and scopes. Then,
There's just so many polished little effect things that really help take it that last, that last 10%. And those guys did a lot of that stuff. And, really made a huge difference.
Yeah, I feel dirty trying to pick out any particular people because we've had such a solid team.
Oh, dude,
everybody else. Matt and Ian did great effects,
and we've handed around the Marksman from that Resistance teaser trailer. That is like one of the that's an award that goes to someone during the last year of the production cycle, and they get a parking space and a car wash and all that cool stuff. So there's been a lot of people highlighted internally, but those are just a few externally. So before we wrap this up, I wanted to give you guys each one last chance to say something before we go and hopefully get another drink before the cute bartenders leave with the alcohol. So I'm going to start with Drew, though. Do you have any final thoughts to impart to everyone before?
I don't. I don't, and yet I do. I don't, and yet I will say some words. I would say... I'll just say that, like, it has honestly been like an amazing experience. Like I shipped three games in the first 3 years I was here, and it was awesome. It always felt like we were down to the wire, and this game, like, I'm so proud of what this team has accomplished, and the amount of love, the amount of grief people have given like me and Marcus and Cameron and. Everyone, I say that in a good way, and that, like, people are like, yeah, I don't like this. Make this. Can you make this? This needs to be better. And it's like, yeah, you're right. This does need to be better. And I think in a fast development cycle, a lot of that stuff gets shuttled to the side. And I think with a longer development cycle, sometimes you can just get complacent. And I think it's just been awesome working with people who are so passionate and want to make a great game. And I've never been happier about a game I've made, and I can't wait to get this out on in what 2 months and
less
get
than
in
2 months from today,
less than 2 months, and get in people's hands and start hearing what people think, because I think people are going to be really blown away by what we've done here.
Cameron,
I mean, I guess I kind of feel the same way. It's been probably the best project I've worked on, and like the amount of time we've had to like. Iterate and polish will definitely be shown off. You know, you'll definitely see it. You'll see that extra time we put into it, and I think that that's big. You know, it is definitely big.
And still, like, there's lots more polish to come for multiplayer and iteration. So we'll get some live users, going in the next couple
months. That's important. Give your feedback. Play it. You know,
MyResistance.net, InsomniacGames.com forums. You can even send us an email at info or Twitter and all that. I'll get to all that at the end, but. Finally, Marcus Smith.
I want the game to speak for itself, so I'm just going to say September 6th in America, North America, and probably there really close after.
I think it's the 8th or 9th, depending on the European country you live in.
Are you talking about ship date?
September 6th is U.S. on shelves, and then 8th or 9th, I think, is Europe.
Okay, so very close thereafter.
Yeah, it might be Europe. The 6th. Yeah, I think Europe's by that far. UK is the last.
Just in time for the weekend in France.
That's right. The important thing is... you know, go check it out. Go buy it. Go play it. And I think your money's well spent. That's what we're looking for.
All right, folks. Well, that is the...
Hey, did you know that...
If Hayden were to get a tattoo, it would be in Half-Life. But he's not sure that he'd want that
tattoo. Ryan, did you know that Ryan was getting married?
I did know that Ryan was getting married. And I was just stuck in to talk about Brandon's tattoo. He must be... I can't wait to go see what he looks like now. We've been in here for a while.
Yeah, this is going to be pretty good.
I've known that for about a year. Ryan's going
to
get married.
I have to go home and take care of my baby. Wow.
Yeah.
So, thank you for listening to this. If you've made it this far, thank you for listening to us talk for the last hour and 40 minutes, which is beyond what I expected this to go, but I think it's been really interesting. A lot of good stuff. People love long-ass podcasts, dude.
Weird.
Like, Weekend Confirmed goes 2.5-3 hours every single week, and that blows my mind. So, thank you for listening to us. A lot of cool stuff coming the next few weeks. To keep up with all the latest, Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/insomniacgames. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/insomniacgames. You can sign up for our newsletter on our website. There's a contest there to get access to the beta. I don't want to say a contest, really applying, but if you're subscribed to the newsletter and you apply on this website, you can get it. And if you aren't subscribed to the newsletter, applying will get you our newsletter as well. There's our forums at insomniacgames.com. There's also our forums at myresistance.net. I'm shilling right now.
Or you can just show up at our doorstep at 2255 North Ontario Street in Burbank, California. Just ask two blocks from the Bob Hope Airport.
Just ask for James Stevenson.
Please. Yeah. Or, you know, go on someone's personal website, find their cell phone number, call them first thing in the morning to give them your feedback. Don't do that. Don't do that.
I'm going home and taking my website down.
Yeah. Or at least removing your cell phone from it. Yes. That is everything we've got for this week. Thank you for listening. Send us your feedback, as always. We look forward to hearing what you think about the beta. And if you haven't pre-ordered Resistance 3, we kindly ask you to please go pre-order our game. It helps us out a ton. And if you're going to buy it anyway, why not just throw the $5 down or go on Amazon? You don't have to throw anything down, and they'll ship it to you on release date if you have Amazon Prime.
Or Sharpshooter Bundle or 3D Bundle.
With the 3D TV. Hopefully that comes out on September 6th. We'll see. We don't know the date of that. I think that's everything we got. Any last words? Shout out? No.
September 6th.
Drew Murray, Mark Smith, Cameron Christian, thank you guys so much for coming along for the ride. This is James Stevenson signing off for the Full Moon Show.